Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, with this program, we're going to be into part two of our men's discussion of Jules Verne's classic work, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So again, I feel that's a very important book. It has a lot to offer, and I do think there's a lot more in the book than appears on the surface. So with me in the studio today are my good friend and literature lover, Daryl Hope.
Hello, glad to be here.
Also with me here today is my wonderful personal assistant, George Haddad, who is also a junior here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. Welcome, George.
Thanks for having me.
And again, we also have Mr. John Wood. He's a senior here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. Welcome back, John.
Thanks for having me, Mr. Lee.
Okay. I like to pick on Jack. He's funny. All right. So last time we were talking about the character Nemo. I think we probably, talked him to death or maybe we talked him into more mystery. And now we're going to continue with our discussion of Aronnax, and we're going to ask Jack to give us his take on Monsieur Aronnax.
Yes, I think you mentioned this either in an earlier program or in a discussion just between you and me, but Aronnax really strikes me as the voice of Jules Verne himself.
Yes.
He does certainly seem to be a medium for conveying the ideas, the opinions, the viewpoints that this French writer had. And you can't help but notice the certain sense of nationalistic pride that Aronnax shows throughout the novel, especially in his initial intrigue over discovering Ned Land as a French-Canadian.
He's French, very, very definitely French-Canadian. Yes.
And so he admits to the audience of the novel that that's what initially drew him to Ned Land's over the other crewmen of the Abraham Lincoln. He also briefly talks a bit about the way a European should act when dealing with the natives, or the savages, as he calls them, of that Pacific island nation. How when he is being threatened by, when Aronnax is being threatened by one of the natives, he states that it's better for a European to riposte rather than to be aggressive in the attack. You kind of get this sense out of his dialogue that he's got a very proud sense of nationality, of his heritage, and especially when he discovers that that crewman who is attacked and killed by the giant squid is French, he immediately feels a connection to this sailor who he's never even talked to or exchanged names with, maybe not even seen before, but he immediately feels a connection with this sailor as soon as he starts screaming for help in French. So he can definitely detect this nationalistic pride in Aronnax, and perhaps that was even part of the ideas and the viewpoints of Verne himself.
Well, I think that's really a good point to bring out about the one crew member that was French and he didn't know it. He really makes a point of that. You know, here's a Frenchman in trouble. Here's a Frenchman that has died, and he didn't even know that he was a Frenchman. And it's because of the language that I'm assuming that Nemo, and forced on all the sailors. They had their own language, and so he had never spoken in French before that. He had seen this man, so but I think I could add to that to what you're saying there, Jack. Even when he talks about the other explorers that are exploring islands and all that, they're French. You know, he uses the French, and then if you look at the ship that they find at the bottom of the sea that was used to help the Americans in the Revolution was a French frigate, you know. And so even when they find the Avenger, now I'm not going to try and slay the the French version of what that ship's name was. But you know, the French really do believe that they helped America win the war against Britain. I mean, that is very much in their thinking. And so I do think that one of the things that kind of, if you put it that way, Aronnax does speak for the French nation, and they're very talented people. But at that time, a lot of the people were explorers. Of course, you have the Spanish, you know, the French, and you have the English. They're all explorers, and that was the time period where you got out, you know, you got out of your own nation and went around and declared more territory for your nation. So it is kind of interesting. Go ahead, Jack.
It makes sense that Verne would really place an emphasis on that. I mean, his books were taking off not just in France, but especially around the English world. I think it was probably a matter of national pride for Verne himself that his novels were so well received amongst English-speaking people.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, so, but the French, as Mr. Derry Hope was pointing out a couple programs ago, the French didn't really discover him till after he died. Mm-hmm. And then they made him a part of the French Academy, but that wasn't until, you know, after he had died. So,
well, and you think too, the time that he was writing, you know, this was just after Louisiana Purchase, and so even he had a big following in the United States, and so the United States, they still had this sort of feeling that everything that was high culture was France, and that you should look to France for things. So Jules Verne had a ready audience among the United States, in the United States, because of the esteem in which French people were considered at that time.
One of our, you know, let's say maybe most world-traveled, you know, founding father was Ben Franklin, and he loved French. He loved everything French. And so, okay, George, so what's your take on Aronnax? Or, wait, you already gave us one, didn't you, last program?
I already said my piece. Okay. I can say it again.
All right. No, we're not going to. Let's move on now to Ned. Ned, and we'll move on to the next group, Ned and Conseil here. So let's see, Derry, what do you think of old
Ned? Ned is a very earthy figure. He's the harpoonist. He's the one that's very sort of plain and regular guy kind of person. And he's not given to research and not given to fine art and all those kinds of things. He likes harpooning, good food, out hunting, you know, on the land. And he comes from a rugged land at that time, so that would sort of fit.
Yeah, French Canada, for sure. Oh, right. Yes.
Would fit the personality. And so he's portrayed that way, and he provides that that balance in this book, because he is a figure that sort of represents the common man and what the interest of the common man and the way the common man is, which is unlike Nemo and Aronnax, who aren't like the common man.
Yeah, but I think the thing about Ned that really impresses me, and there are people like this. I mean, I have to admit, you know, for me, you know, I'm happy to, you know, be doing research and writing and reading, and, you know, of course, I love teaching. You know, I love all those things. It's just my personality. But I also think, you know, I've mentioned before that having bronchial asthma as a child, it really did keep me different than my brothers. My brothers are playing football, they're playing baseball, they're out of doors a lot. You know, I was allergic to, you know, ragweed. I was allergic to house dust and dust. So, you know, I was very limited in what I could do in the summertime. Winter sports, I was big on winter sports. I loved to ice skate. I loved to be in the snow. I loved to ski, you know, that kind of thing. But it really does kind of mold you and shape you. And so, but Ned just reminds me of the kind of, you know, the real men who'd like to be doing something all the time, and it has to be very active and has to be challenging. I mean, when I think of Ned, I think of Moby Dick and the harpoonist in Moby Dick, and how they have to be a little crazy, you know, to get out on the edge of the ship and then, you know, harpoon the whales who could eat them any second. So, okay. But I do think that is the balance in the book. And I still believe that the book is about, part of the book is about Nemo is trying to create a utopian kind of society, and everything on top of the sea has been corrupted. Everything below the sea is still like pure and pristine, except except when he talks about the wild animals that can eat you, like the sharks and the squids and all that. So there's still trouble down there, but he kind of wants to make it perfect. So, George, let's talk about Ned here.
Yes, I like Ned, actually, if that's a surprise to everyone that I like a character. No. But no. Ned,
he's not a hypocrite.
Ned is...
Ned is not a hypocrite.
Ned, yeah, I don't see him much as a hypocrite, but I do see him as a little bit ignorant, because I do agree that he represents the common man, and you have Captain Nemo who's trying to create this perfect society that you're saying, and he kind of does it through intelligence and information. And yes, Captain Nemo is brave as well. He does a lot of physical stuff as well, but Ned is that way, and he's just a different type of that. He doesn't really... I think if you combine Ned's character with Aronnax, you'd have a really good character. A good moral character, I think, because you need both. You need information and you need knowledge, but then you also need to be able to apply it. And
be
I think,
active, right.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, that's what Ned is in this book. He's the more of the applicator of things, because as soon as he sees that things aren't necessarily right on this boat, it seems fishy, that he wants to leave. He doesn't want to stick around it. And that's a good trait to have. If you think something's wrong, you should flee it. You shouldn't want to just understand more about it and stuff like that. It's like you should flee if you see something wrong. And I think that's a good trait that he has. I think on the flip side, he's okay with his ignorance, and I think that's dangerous as well. If you just don't want to learn anything, you know, you have to be able to see the good and learn that, and then see the evil and flee that. And I think Ned has trouble doing that. But I think he's a good, solid character. He provides that contrast, and he kind of is the, you know, the tipping point. You know, are you going to go with Ned or are you going to go with Nemo? Because Ned wants to get out of there and Nemo's going to sink the ship. So it's kind of like you have to make a choice. And I think that's a really interesting contrast.
I do think it's interesting, George, when Aronnax and Ned get together and they have the discussion about when they should flee. And, you know, Aronnax has he's holding back. And then if you remember, this is really towards the end of the book, then Ned says to Aronnax, well, when is it ever going to be right for you to flee? You like this. Then Ned says, look, we agreed to stay to preserve our lives, but we didn't agree that we wouldn't escape. You know, and that was really part of it. And even Aronnax came back and said, you know, Ned, you're right. We didn't agree that we wouldn't try and escape. And so I think, you know, between the two I think George is right. Ned is one. He's willing to take action. He may not think it through exactly, and Aronnax got concerned about that. But still, he's going to take action. And then I think when their first plan didn't work, and he said, we're still going to go tonight, and there was, you know, all this, you know, havoc on the sea, and, you know, it wouldn't have been a good time, and all that. And then he was still going to proceed, but then he does back down. So Jack.
I think it's funny that you mentioned that Ned Lands is the one who sees things fishy happening on the Nautilus, seeing as initially at the start he was the only one who did not believe that the mysterious underwater beast was a fish. So, a bit ironic there.
But he did not. No.
No.
he knew whales enough to know that it wasn't a narwhal.
No, he certainly has a practical head on his shoulders. Initially,
And also he wanted pork. I mean, when they got to the island, remember, he had to have pig. Yeah. And so they killed all the pigs and brought it back. He was tired of eating fish. Excuse me.
Yeah. I had to be initially, funny. I wondered about the character of Ned Lands, and I was wondering about his purpose, why Jules Verne had bothered to put him in there. What did he serve to the story? But the more I think about it, I can see how he's very necessary for Conseil and Aronnax's character, keeping them tied to the land above, keeping them aware that there still is a world out there. Otherwise, Aronnax, and especially Conseil, would be more than content to stay down beneath the waves, experiencing life under there, cataloguing their fish species. He is the one who ties them still back to the land, who allows them to still maintain that connection and that desire to go back. And so I think he's important in that way to also get the reader remembering that there is a need to eventually escape and let us know what happened through through Aronnax's journey. Yeah,
I think in terms of character development, let's say just from a writing standpoint, I think also Verne uses him to generate action. You know, he does generate interest because you do wonder, okay, now what's Ned going to do next? And so I do think his characterization is really very interesting in the way he uses Ned. But I also think it was part of the time period. I mean, French Canada was just getting up and running. I mean, if you remember, even the French Revolution had just happened not too long before that. And so that's when I think that even these things are playing in the back of Verne's mind because, you know, the French Revolution was, you know, it started out so ideological. And, you know, it was like, this is going to solve all the problems of the poor, and this is going to solve, you know, get rid of the feudal system. It was going to get rid of all this. And it ended up in terror. I mean, they call it the Reign of Terror. And so all those things, I think, were working in his mind. And, you know, it was the, you know, the Estates General. Am I saying that correctly? The mm-hmm. Estates General. It was the Third Estate was just made up of all the artisans and the common people. And so I think Ned figures into that area. And it's the same with Conseil. They're in that third, they call it the Third Estate. They weren't the, you know, of course there was the monarchy, then there was the aristocrats and the nobility and the clergy, and then there was the general populace. You know, so, but I do think he does provide a kind of like a refreshing interest, you know, and even Nemo saw some advantage to let him get off the ship because he lets him go to the island. Nemo himself didn't get on the island. In fact, the only time Nemo actually gets on land is where at the South Pole when it's absolutely frozen. Actually, he gets off the Nautilus, which is kind of went against what he even thought. So now let's compare Conseil with Ned. I mean, they're kind of in the same class, but so what do you think of Conseil?
Well, Conseil is a very likable character. I think he is the sidekick to Aronnax, and he's basically a very obedient and attentive servant in every way. He is Flemish, and it's interesting. We don't know anything about his first name. We only know Conseil, we presume, is his last name, or maybe Conseil is his first name. We don't really know what his full name is. It's probably a Flemish name that we can't pronounce anyway, but he's an interesting character in that he in himself is a mystery because we don't really know his full name. Just like Nemo, we don't know Nemo's full name as well. Right. But Conseil is the, like I say, he's the attentive servant to Aronnax. And he and Ned room together, so they're really the same class. And as you talked about society, the way society was in France, he would have been considered sort of the same class. He and right. Ned are the same right. type. That would have been people of that estate. And you really see then that this ship has a society in it, which is supposed to really represent the full society, where you've got, you know, those who are of the more learned. The learned types, those who are more of the land and the worker type, those who are the helpers, and then you have the army, which would be the seamen on board, who we
sailors,
we don't,
right?
Sailors exactly. We don't see much about, but they're the army there that's really sort of protecting everything and keeping everything in order from that standpoint. So you see that, but Conseil's persona is important because it does give or support to Aronnax, and then it provides this interesting threesome between Aronnax, Conseil, and Ned, who they all three bond very well together, in spite of the fact that there are these differences of category and differences of estate. They bond very closely together from the very beginning because of this life-threatening event, but they keep that bond all the way through, you know, and they're able to talk with each other on very open terms and maintain really sort of a close friendship all the way through, even though they see things differently.
Yeah, it's fascinating that they have a unity that is it's real contrast. The sailors are obviously unified. They really support Nemo. But it seems like the unity between Ned and Conseil and Aronnax is Aronnax. he's kind of the glue that holds that all together. But the one thing I think is interesting about Conseil is he likes to do research too. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not a dummy.
No.
But he's not a Ned either.
No.
You know, he really likes to, well, look at the crustaceans and decide how many different types there are, you know. And so I think that's, it's kind of like he's a blend between both worlds. He's like the middle between you know, Aronnax and Nemo and them. So go ahead, George.
Just one point on that.
Okay.
His name is Conseil, which means advice, but he never gives any, you know, which is very unusual.
Right.
You think, where did he get the name Conseil if he never gives any, you know? So it's sort of odd. That's an odd thing about him.
Yeah. I have one more comment about him, but I want to hear what George has to say first. So.
Yeah, I think just going off what Mr. Hope just said about the name, he doesn't give advice or anything like that, but he's very supportive and he is very loyal. And I think that's noble and it's nice, but I think you're right about him being like, he's like Ned. He's a man of action. He jumps in after, he helps Aronnax. Even towards the end, he's giving him breath when the air on the ship is running out. So he's very loyal and he has a lot of action behind him. I think the thing that bothers me about him, or that I'm concerned about him, is he does other people's actions for them. He jumps in because Aronnax is in danger. He gives him breath because he's in danger. He thinks the shell is priceless because Aronnax explains that it's rare. He goes in the water because Aronnax goes in the water. Like, he does everything because it's for Aronnax. He doesn't do anything for himself. And then Ned, he's a man of action because he thinks that he should do this, and he thinks that he needs to be this, and he thinks that he needs to do that, so he does that. And it's kind of like that contrast of doing stuff for other people and doing stuff for yourself. And being loyal, I mean, that's noble and it's nice, but he still has to prove things for himself. Like, you need to combine his loyalness with proving, and I think that's important. And it's like when you combine all the characters, you find traits in each one that are good, and then you find ones that are bad. And in him, I think it's just like the borderline ignorance. Yes, he likes to research, and yes, he likes to find out things, but he does it in such a shallow way that it's actually someone else's thoughts that he takes on.
Okay, well, I think there could be another way to look at that. I mean, if he was trained as a servant in the servant class, if you know, of course, we've all watched a lot of, you know, British television, and there was, I mean, they were just trained to accept that was the way to do things, and the thing is. It, to me, I've modeled over this whole thing with his name, the meaning of his name, and if you read a lot of the, let's say the backstory or the background for the book, people that are critics of the book say that Conseil's name does mean advice, or counsel, you know, to give counsel, but I think he doesn't. There's no record of it. But it just seems to me like he seemed very stable, and maybe that it was just his stability that maybe is his advice. Just to, it seemed like he could help keep even Aronnax on the calm side. So that to me is a little bit mysterious about the book. But this is a book of mystery. There's no doubt about it. So. Go ahead, Mr. Yes. Wood.
I agree with Mr. Hope and George in that I really admired his loyalty to his master. And you have to remember that he is a product of the time and, like you said, a product of his station in life. So that's why he's so loyal and his thinking goes immediately towards his master every time. I think that's a commendable attribute, really. And I think we could all stand to have a bit more of that loyalty in our lives, that sort of servant mindset. I do think he's a very, he's an unusual character in that he is a man of different extremes. In some cases, we see this incredibly thoughtful, service-minded man. He comes up with some great insights. In fact, one of the best insights in the novel is when they are observing various shellfish and they see some nautilids and an argonaut swim by, this strange spiral-shaped shell and the tentacles coming out of it. And Aronnax is doing his usual science thing. He's explaining all the, the various characteristics and classifications of these beasts, and he explains to Conseil how this Argonaut can come out of its shell if it wants to, but it chooses never not to. And at that, Conseil goes, "That's just like Captain Nemo.
Yeah.
He always has the ability to come out of his shell, the Nautilus, but he never chooses to." And he ponders that maybe the captain should have named his ship the Argonaut,
Argonaut,
the
Nautilus. Yeah.
I thought that was a very clever insight of Jules Verne, and I'm so happy that he gave it to Conseil, just to show just how insightful this quiet, humble servant really is. But on the other hand, you do see some outbursts when he gets very violent and almost shoots the native for destroying the precious shell, or when he gets stung by the fish near South America.
He ate the fish.
And he ate it out of revenge.
he cannibalized it after it stung him.
Quite a humorous contradiction, even within the man himself, not just with Ned Lanz.
Okay, let's see if we can do this quick. So what do you think the point of the book is? What overall lesson can we take from the book? We only have like 1 minute left, less than a minute.
Well, I think the point of the book is first to show something that would be interesting to readers, obviously, which is something that no one knows about, which is undersea. And so that obviously, that and the fact that you get all of this scientific detail, all this historical things that come into it, the explanations of art and music that you get through the library. So it's a tome of lots of information, which I think is very good. But I think it's an interesting study of human nature, as all good novels are.
Yes.
They're interesting studies of human nature and how people interact with each other, and in this, in a very confined environment, and how that environment really is a microcosm of the world that they're trying to escape. Which is,
I think it's just, I mean, you couldn't get more confined than on a sub underneath the sea. I mean, that's total. I mean, they should do a reality TV show of it. Go ahead, George.
Yes. I don't know if this is Verne's point of the book, but something that I got out of it was you can try and create your own world, but it will never be perfect because we're not perfect. So you can try and create utopia, but because we're still corrupt and we're still a part of that world, it's going to ultimately lead to failure. It's just going to break down somewhere. It will break down somewhere.
Okay, Jack.
Once again, Mr. Hope summed up my thoughts just so precisely. I can hardly add to them.
You're just chickening out.
I do agree that Jules Verne, a scientist, an incredibly well-educated and thoughtful man with such a extensive knowledge of the natural world, he has all this information and you can tell he just longs to share it with everyone. And in this way, in this novel format, he's able to spread his information, spread what he knows and his passion to countless thousands and today millions of people.
Yes. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I just wanted to say to all of our listeners out there that if you haven't read the book, certainly read it. You could go back and listen to all the podcasts. They're up there forever. So, you can go back and get them. So we have run out of time for today, and I would very much like to hear what you have to say about our Summer of Classics series. Now, next time, we are going to begin our discussion of the mystery book. And, excuse me, you probably don't know what the mystery book is yet because I haven't told you. So let me just say this. One scholar lists this book as number one on the Western canon. We talked about the Western canon a long time ago. And these are the books that every bright student should be reading. Another listed as number three on the Western canon. Both feel that it is the main piece of literature that has affected all aspects of Western society, including government, law, social norms. So next time we will begin a four-episode series on the King James Authorized Bible. So if you don't have one, you can find an inexpensive copy on either Amazon.com or ABE Books. So we're really looking forward to that series. And it is a fantastic book, and we're going to show you why it's so fantastic. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So until next time, keep reading.
You've You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.